You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It's Friday, time for our reporter roundtable. If you haven't been with us before, this is when we get you updated on all the news that made headlines around our region this past week. Joining us in studio today, Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Statesman, Margaret Carmel with the Idaho Press, and Seth Ogilvy with Idaho Public Television. Welcome and happy Friday.
Thank you.
Well, you know, as it's been for every Friday for the last however many Fridays, we're going to start with the Boise mayor's race because it's still going on.
Yeah, and we still have a couple more weeks to go.
Yeah. And what I wanted to really talk about was what happened earlier this week. And I feel like in a lot of ways it kind of started right here on Idaho Matters. We interviewed Mayor Dave Beter on Monday here on Idaho Matters, and he mentioned that they had said yes to two more debates. And so he was like, so I'm looking forward to those debates. And then the following day, Tuesday, Lauren McClain and Mayor Beter did meet at the City Club of Boise. And Scott, kind of talk to us about that, because you've written two articles now regarding kind of the fallout from all of this.
Right. I covered the debate. I was at the debate and I wrote an analysis out of the debate. And Mayor Beter was very aggressive. He was, very pointed and critical of Lauren McClain during the debate. And I wrote a column right after it happened and said that I really kind of thought that might backfire on him, because I felt like the vote on November 5th was a referendum on Mayor Beter's leadership style, maybe being too shutting down criticism and shutting down opposing views and being too headstrong. And then here he is in this debate doing exactly that. And I thought, and I wrote a column that said, I think that might backfire. But then just if few hours later, Lauren McClain issued a press release saying that she was not going to do any more debates. And so then I wrote another column saying that, well, I think that's probably a bad look for her. I don't think that's the wisest strategy for her to say I'm not going to be doing any more debates, because this is the first time that the two of them have met. And you and I both know during the general election, there were seven forums, and I'll call them forums because you've got—
They were not debates. They were forums, and there's a difference.
Right. And so these forums, when you've got seven candidates, you've got 1 minute to answer. They're I don't want to say they're all softball questions. Some of them were tough questions, but you're really just trying to get the candidates to talk about their positions and not necessarily to debate one another. And so this was the first time this week that we had an actual real debate between the two candidates.
And Margaret, you've been covering this as well.
One thing that I thought was really the key takeaway from that debate was kind of this small moment where the moderator asked the two of them what they felt about how they felt about the result of the propositions 1 and 2 that said folks overwhelmingly wanted to vote on the main library project and a possible public-private partnership on the sports stadium. Those passed, 75% of the vote, really strong mandate. And the moderator said, what do you guys feel about these results? And Mayor Beter said, this is not a referendum on spending. This is people voicing their opinion on these two particular projects. And Lauren McClain said the opposite. She said, no, I think this is people weighing in and saying they want more say on large capital projects from the city. And they view these things as very diametrically opposed, because McClain was saying, she was really viewing that as we need to open up more dialogue, more input. And Mayor Beter continues to hold that that view of no major capital projects and decisions that needs to be, a little bit more closed off from the public.
But doesn't that go to this whole idea of why two candidates should possibly debate? Because in the news release that Lauren McClain released 4 hours after the City Club debate was— I'm paraphrasing the quote, but it was basically like people who want to listen to a debate want fireworks. And having moderated two of these forums, and she said, I've already done 9 debates. No, you did 9 forums where you had maximum 2 minutes to give a soundbite about what you thought about something. There is no digging in to the issues. And as you pointed out, Margaret, there was never a conversation in any of the forums about how they were viewed these referendums differently. And right. and so then you go back to this idea of, should we not, as voters, be asking both of these final candidates what your positions are, and being able to not necessarily have fireworks, but we vote for who goes into office, and we need to know more.
Yeah, and I think Bill Manny, the moderator of the City Club debate, he did a great job of asking the questions, but I do think it was a little bit of just a taste of what we could have for another debate, and I would like to see at least one more debate where we get into those issues a little more deeply.
And I mean, gosh, I've probably produced over 50 debates in my lifetime and watched like way too many.
We've all been too involved.
And I think for me, like having one debate is really important. Having two candidates come together, look each other in the eye and see if they really hold up to the fire. After that, I'm kind of sympathetic to the idea that maybe an editorial board could do a better job of this. I mean, debates are not where you get deep into policy differences. Debates are like 2-minute answers, maybe a 1-minute follow up, and then you got to move on, and then you're worried about time. And sometimes like someone's position takes a lot longer to explain than the other person's position. Debates are good, but they're not always the end all for how we get this information. And I think we're all wanting to know a little bit more about the policy differences between them, ironically, mm-hmm. after the election. Well, but I don't know if this is the best form to do it either.
Well, and I wonder though, Seth, with that, is that because there were so many candidates, right, that when these forums were going on, we really couldn't get into the policy differences. At least I know in the two that I moderated, it was such, and I don't think maybe the public understands that, is what a strict time limit you have. And that buzzers are going when they go overtime. And they're very aware of that. And, when we ask as an electorate, we want to know your record. We want to know where you stand on things. How are you different? And that has been a conversation we've been hearing about these two candidates in particular, because it is the mayor and the president of the city council. These are two people who have basically been side to side for almost a decade. And have you, Margaret, in what you've reported, have you seen any other kind of digging into the issues with the exception of what you saw at City Club?
Well, I'll just say that as a kind of strict news reporter, I don't have the freedom to kind of pundit on this the
right.
way that Scott does, so I'm not really going to comment on whether I think that they should have another debate or not. But I would like to point out that this strategy of wanting to cut off debates is something that typically a front runner does, to try to cut off the oxygen in the media from a challenger. And I think that really speaks to how things are going in this race. But as far as digging into the policy issues, I think that both candidates have been really open to talking policy. Mayor Beter, who is typically shy from the press, he usually speaks through a spokesman, has sat down with multiple members of the media on the days after the election results and wanted to talk policy, specifically around homeless camps. He's been dragging up specific policy points, and McLean has been very open about that stuff as well. So I think there's been a lot of talk about policy in the pages of various news sources and also in the materials released by the campaigns themselves.
And that goes back
to the pundit class. It's fun. It's fun over here.
It sounds fun. It sounds fun, but I'm going to stick to my ethical.
I love it. But, but it goes back to Seth's point. Let's play the devil's advocate here. He was willing to talk policy after the general election.
And that's one of the interesting things. I mean, I've not been doing as much. I've been doing the front end reporting. I've been writing very much. But I've been hearing from both campaigns quite a bit over the last week. In the run-up to the election and then this last week. And I would say that predominantly we're not talking policy. I mean, we're talking personal attacks. We're talking accusations. I mean, that's what I'm getting from these campaigns. And I'm imagining if we go to a forum, a debate, whatever you're going to call it, that's what we're going to receive.
It feels like a bad divorce. And they're fighting for custody of the kids. And where are the kids?
No, it really does.
Right?
Well, and the people that I kind of feel sorry for, I mean, not that I should feel sorry for any political party, but the Democrats are eating their own right now. I mean, it's this should be a celebration of you know, a new Democrat, and it will be a new Democrat, or it'll be a Democrat holding the, you know, the largest executive office in Idaho outside of the governorship. And instead of a celebration, right now they're, I mean, like, people are being pulled apart. I mean, it's, people are picking sides. It's getting nasty behind the scenes.
So what also happened after the general election was Mayor Beter shifting gears on the library project. So,
yes.
Margaret, you covered this.
Mm-hmm. So one thing that was really the issue that loomed large over this election was Boise's main library project, you know, budgeted to be $85 million. And then, it, you know, but the design was $104 million, and they just couldn't get that price in line with the budget. And I think it rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, as well as the city's plan to relocate the historic 1940s era log cabin that currently houses nonprofit The Cabin over there. And so Mayor Beter was really sticking to his guns throughout the entire election, saying this library project is what we need. It's what we need. And then following the results of that the Proposition 1 vote, where a lot of people said, no, we want to vote on this. You know, Mayor Beter came out and said, OK, we're not just going to pause the project until things in the construction world calm down and we can make it cheaper. We're going to start from scratch. And one thing I thought was very interesting was that release came from the campaign. It did not come from the office of the city. You know, and those entities are going to be very different, which to me, like, that was a political move to try to win back voters who have really been growing dissent over the library. I know they say don't read the comments on your articles, but I'm always—
You kind of can't help it.
I'm
right
always
now
up there reading the comments. And every time I write about the library, there's just reams of comments saying no library, no library. People keep referring to it as the Taj Mahal library project. It's getting to be increasingly unpopular. And I think that was him reacting to that, trying to win some points.
And it's worth noting that about 70% of the voters voted for the referendum, the proposition to vote on the library. That percentage matches up with the percentage of people who voted against Mayor Beter. And so I think there's definitely a correlation, the referendum on those propositions as a referendum on Mayor Beter.
I suppose to defend Mayor Beter a little bit, though, I mean, wouldn't you want your mayor to be responsive to the large demands of the people? I mean, that, like, it might be political, but that also kind of makes sense.
However, but again, during the debate, time and time again, he said the mayor needs to make tough decisions. And that's what I, you know, and to a large extent, I respect that's absolutely true. But it seems like he wants to have it both ways, have his cake and eat it too. Say the mayor's got to make tough decisions, and that's why I'm the best person for this job. But I'm going to listen to the voters because they've now finally told me that I need to go back on my decision.
I think for people that, you know, really watching the back and forth of this library issue is that, you know, in August, whenever Mayor Beter said, hey, I want to put this project on pause because we can't get it to a direct up or down vote on the ballot. And we also can't get that budget down to $85 million. We're going to put a pause on this and come back. City Council President McLean came in and said, oh, I think this project should have been paused long ago. And several people in the media, including myself, kind of, you know, inquired and said, well, if you thought it should be paused long ago, why is this the first time we're hearing about that? And that's something that the mayor, the Beter's campaign jumped on her for. They called it flip-flopping, you know, saying you've been in this library project this whole time. Why are we just now hearing about your concerns about it? And she kind of pulled this political jujitsu move where she said, hey, I'm listening to the people. I'm changing my mind based on what they want and based on input. It's not flip-flopping. It's listening. And since then, you know, and then when Mayor Beter made that similar evolution following the election, he made the same argument. He said, I'm all about transparency. I'm all about listening. But I don't necessarily think that with the timing that he achieved the same jujitsu move as McLean, because to voters, I think, it, you know, just looking at social media, it comes across as too little too late.
But the argument could also be made that what the voters did, as you mentioned, Scott, was a referendum on his leadership and potentially not listening. Why is the not same? Why is that not being made against McLean for not listening in her 8 years on city council?
And I think maybe just flip-flopping is in the eye of the beholder. I mean, she's been there the entire time. I mean, let's face facts. There's probably not going to be.
She's been there for half of his reign as mayor.
Yeah, his legacy is her legacy in a lot of ways. I mean, they probably won't be mayor that different from each other. I mean, a lot of it is style. A lot of it is who you like. I mean, they've worked hand in hand for almost, what, a decade? I mean, it's been a while.
Almost a decade.
Yeah,
and he appointed her. Let's not forget.
Exactly. I mean, it is odd that you have them working so closely together. And then at the end, and this most likely is the end. I was talking to Phil McGrane the other day, and he brought up an interesting statistic. 96% of all runoff elections end the exact same way. And those are mostly like 49 to 48. Mm-hmm. And this was a fairly large difference there. I mean, these people are going to have to get together, you know, moving forward. And they're not exactly cooperating right now.
One other, you know, thing that I have brought up, you know, I feel like every time I come on the show is just, you know, McClain is very similar to Mayor Beter, and their legacies are tied. But especially in the last, you know, year and a half since I've been here, just kind of sitting at city council every week, city council president Lauren.
Predict the future.
No, I don't.
We're not predicting anything here.
You know, City Council President McClain, you know, she was on the other side of Mayor Beter on several key decisions that really, you know, were major split points. This conflict over the transfer of the land of the Grove Plaza and how that ties to the sports park. She was really leading the charge on, you know, going away from what Mayor Beter wanted. She also voted differently than him on the St. Luke's issue over their block on Bannon.
In downtown.
And there's been some other kind of key moments where I think she has looked to something different or, you know, done that. And really, it is kind of minor. It is inside baseball. But I feel like those major moments where a council that votes together really often, whenever they don't vote together, you usually see McClain on the other side of the issue than Beter. And I think that really we are talking small margins here, but that should not go unnoticed.
There is actually another runoff election going on that doesn't seem to be getting as much play because we literally just spent the last segment talking about the Boise mayoral race. Margaret, you have been covering this Caldwell City Council race, and there will be a runoff, yes?
So my just to clarify, my colleague Erin Bamer has been covering it, but I've been following her reporting closely.
You are so good about giving credit where credit is due. All right, so tell us, get us updated on what's going on with that.
So former Idaho State Senator John McGee came out to run for Caldwell City Council, and he, you know, he's kind of a divisive figure because he has had some run-ins with the law. He had a 2011 DUI, and then in 2012, he resigned from the Idaho State Legislature because of, you know, he was accused of sexual harassment. He pled guilty to misdemeanor disturbing the peace related to that. And now he's come back, and he ended up earning, you know, the majority of the vote. I think it was, you know, well, it depends on how you define the word majority, but he ended up earning what I think is, you know, 37-38% of the vote. And he had two challengers that were, you know, in the 30%. And Caldwell has not had a runoff in three decades since they passed its current ordinance in 1989. And then all of a sudden after, you know, McGee won this or, you know, he earned that the most votes, then there was the city called for a runoff. And now there's been this whole flurry of debate of the legal language and everything like that. And so now it appears that McGee will be facing off in a runoff with Democrat Evangeline Beachler for city council in Caldwell on December 3rd on the same day.
And the incumbent, he came in third, but he's come out and said he will support Beecher, correct?
He's considering endorsing her. He's kind of, you know, he hasn't quite come out and said it. He made a reference to, you know, he doesn't want her promoting her lifestyle, which is in reference to the fact that Beachler is married to a woman. And he later clarified that to say he just doesn't want more diversity on the council. So I think, you know, that's kind of, you know, in the eyes of the beholder of what that really means and how you feel about that. But he has not directly said he'd endorse her, but he said he was pleasantly surprised with how many things they agreed with each other on in terms of municipal government.
And he told me earlier on that he would support Beachler over McGee and that he would encourage his supporters to support Beachler, not necessarily because of their politics, because, you know, Beachler is a Democrat. She's fairly liberal. Chuck Stoddick is conservative. He's been very conservative on the council. So they don't match up completely on the issues, but he told me that he felt McGee would just be a liability for the city and wouldn't support him.
And there are still some very strong feelings about McGee out in the world. I was
absolutely.
I was actually by the Sawtooths by a fire, talking to a couple, ranching couple from southeastern Idaho, and they learned that I worked at the State House. And the first things out of their mouth was, "If McGee comes back, tell this story. Our daughter was an intern when he was there, and she was terrified. She was absolutely terrified. And she, every time she hears his name, she's still traumatized by it." So people, I mean, these things are still in the community. Mm-hmm. When you go back and you read the police report, it's not disturbing.
It's not pleasant.
It's not a pleasant situation. But for the people in Caldwell, I do want to say Caldwell is like scrambling to do this recall election. Stay tuned on where your polling places are going to be. You need to make sure that you know how to vote, because unlike Ada County, I don't think they were quite as prepared.
Well, but I believe that at this point they are only planning on opening one polling station in the city of Caldwell for this election. And Phil McCrane, who is the Ada County clerk, when he was on the program after the general election, he said they will open every single polling station in the city of Boise on Election Day. So this is going to be interesting on how that plays out as well. I want to shift gears and talk about California. In particular,
everyone's favorite topic.
Everybody's favorite topic to bash on. In particular, an article by former Statesman reporter Maria Lagonga, she's now a Metro reporter for the Los Angeles Times, wrote an article earlier this week, Scott, about basically saying stop blaming California. And not stop blaming California. You wrote that. But then she wrote about kind of just how we're mean to Californians, basically.
Yeah. And I mean, the article has garnered some criticism, but I think that there definitely is an anti-California. Everybody who lives here knows that there's an anti-California mm-hmm. sentiment. Perhaps the article overplayed it a little bit. You know, the main subject of the article is Wayne Ritchie, who ran for Boise mayor on kind of this anti-California platform. And he received all of 847 votes out of 52,000 votes cast. So to lend credence to this guy who was very entertaining during the campaign, I think is a little bit of an overstatement. And I wrote a column following up on it saying that I also feel that the anti-California sentiment is overstated.
Well, and let's talk about that a bit, because what I appreciated about the article you wrote were the numbers when it comes to who is moving in, not just to Idaho, but to the Treasure Valley. And I believe one thing you quoted was there were 80,000 people that moved into Idaho in 2018.
Right. And Californians only made up 26%, about 21,000 people. So, you know, when you talk about people moving into Idaho, most of them are not from California, that you have a small percentage. And then the other thing that I pointed out in the column was that you got to think about who you're talking about. Stereotypes work in the generality, but when you start talking about people that you know, and there are so many people, myself included, that are transplants to Idaho, that you can't generalize about every single person. Right. And if you look at who is moving into Idaho, Californians only make up a quarter of those people.
Well, and I believe in the article you also pointed out that if we look at the Treasure Valley, the majority of people moving into the Treasure Valley are from other parts of Idaho.
Right. And that was another article. That was a different article that looked at the I think Canyon County was the number one place for people moving into Ada County. And there were the top two places were other counties within Idaho that were moving into Ada County. So I definitely think that this Californians taking over the Treasure Valley is well overstated.
You can, and that's why this story is so complicated. I reported on it a few weeks ago for the Idaho Press, is that no matter, you can kind of get what you want by slicing the numbers different ways. So if you look at what's the number one state that people come here from, it's California. So, you know, people that don't like California will look at that number and say, I'm right. But then if you look at the number one county of people moving to Ada County from, it's Canyon County. And then people who don't agree with the California thing will say, I'm right. And it just turns into this kind of numbers game of how you look at different things. And it makes having an argument pretty infuriating.
I actually did a little research project with the School of Public Service a couple of years ago, trying to like answer this very question, and it got so complicated because I think if I remember right, that Orange County had the largest number of people coming into Idaho. This was 2 years ago. It was slightly over King County, but it also there were more people going back to Orange County. So like, how do you read that? Like people are going both ways. So as far as a net gain of Californians from Orange County, it was a net loss.
But I wonder, Scott, and you do point this out, I wonder how much of this anti-California sentiment has to deal with finances. And in the sense that when you can sell a small bungalow in Orange County, California for upwards of $1 million, and you can come to anywhere in Idaho, basically, and buy something not just in cash, but you can buy over asking, and a native Idahoan, the majority of them, can't do that.
Right. And I think that that is really the important thing here is that I think all the anti-California sentiment aside, again, it comes back to our inability to handle the growth. I mean, we could have 21,000 people coming from Nevada, and that wouldn't change the problems that we're having. So it's really how we're handling transportation, affordable housing, education. We're building new schools on the backs of taxpayers. Transportation just gets worse every day, and we have no solutions to handle it. The affordable housing issue is definitely a problem. So it's as I pointed out in the column, it's not really necessarily a California problem. It's a growth problem, and let's figure out the solutions to those problems.
And let's also remember, it is easy to throw stones at city leaders, but ultimately, so much of it has to do with who is in our state legislature.
And absolutely. And one of the big things that I think we're not totally dealing with, we might in the future, is that cost of living thing, which I think people equate my housing prices are going up, my this is going up. It's Californians' fault. Last year, one of the interesting stats that was being thrown around at the Idaho legislature was if you look at real cost of living in Boise, we're above San Francisco. When you look at just to live versus what the average wage is. And the irony is it's also throughout all of Idaho too. It's not just the metro areas. Idahoans are having a lot of trouble keeping up with how much things cost. And I think they do see Californians coming in, paying cash for houses and thinking it's their fault, even though maybe it's more of a problem within Idaho and maybe it's not the Californians.
Well, and that's the thing. And maybe we should be looking at things like wages, things like go on rates, you know, all of these issues that we talk about, but yet goes back to the state legislature.
It's much easier to just blame the other, Gemma.
Be nice to the just be nice to the transplants from one transplant to another. That's the case. I mean, I came here 21 years ago. This is the longest I've ever lived somewhere in my entire life. But I wasn't born and raised here.
Well, and you pointed out too in that article by Maria Laganga, they talked about Tyler Rossa, the former place kicker for Boise State, who is from California and had a business card put on his car saying go back to California, really nasty. And the reaction was like, oh, you know, Tyler Ross is one of the good ones. Don't get mad at him. He's a good Californian.
Right. So he tweets this out and there's all of a sudden this barrage. And in a way, it's like, oh, I see. So because he's a Boise State football player, you're all okay with it. And if he'd had that identification on his car, you wouldn't have done that. Yeah, think about that. Yeah. I want to thank you guys for coming in today.
Thank you.
A pleasure. Looking forward to not having to talk about a mayor's race, but then we will just go into the legislative session. So
we're going to be nostalgic at a certain point.
We are. We're going to go back and we remember when. Our panel today, Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Statesman, Margaret Carmel with the Idaho Press, and Seth O'Gilvie with Idaho Public Television. I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters.